100%.
And when you truly do believe that, it's hard not to get defensive, right?
Of course it is, yeah.
Perhaps start in the middle and then work our way out. There is just some people that are so embedded in inside an echo chamber from the compulsion side and the force-free side that probably they've got the earmuffs and the blinkers on and they're never going to change. But
there's harsh realities of dogs get put to sleep. Fucking shitloads of them week by week. Like, a lot. And it is fucking stressful and it's horrible to see. So the difficulty with the camps is I think we really, really need to come away from that more than anything and have these adult conversations that we're having now in terms of, I think it's just being more open to the idea that people use different methods has been a big one for me. It's quite cringy to look back at now, but I would slate anybody that wasn't on the same team.
Yep.
Because I'll be honest with you, in that camp, a lot of time you are not necessarily taught to do it, but it's like a, it comes down to the labels and the definitions of things that people then argue about.
I think because they're so caught up in hot-headed arguments, they're not realizing a lot of these dog trainers, except for the ones that are purely in it for the cash, truly do believe that they're doing absolutely right by the dog. In this week's episode of Caffeine and Canines, I'm joined by Simon Moody, aka the Mutt Nut. Simon originates from a very different dog training background from myself. He actually started his dog training career training sled dogs in Norway. Since then, he's gone on to be a successful dog trainer who teaches in person and online. He worked at the Dogs Trust for many years, and we had a very open discussion about different dog training ideologies and methods. I love this episode as it was a deep dive into dog training and behavior, and I'm sure you will enjoy it as much as I did. How was your trip in, Simon?
All right, mate, yeah.
Where are you based?
I'm based in Bury, so Manchester way, so about an hour and 10 minutes.
Is that where you've grown up?
Yeah, so pretty much, yeah. Not really ventured out of Bury, to be honest. Moved around a little bit a couple of times, lived in a few different places in the UK. Nothing majorly exciting. Had a brief stint in Norway as well, going back many, many years. That was back when I was dog sledding.
Oh, nice.
But all in all, yeah, the exciting place that is Bury. Manchester.
Talk to us about the dog sledding.
So it's going back a long time ago now, to be fair. That was 2011. And then 2013 as well, went back.
How old were you then?
So I was teeny tiny then. So I was like 19, 20.
And how old are you now?
30.
Okay, same age as me.
Yeah, so that was, without going into a huge story on that, yeah, that was based out in Norway with an English guy. And in a nutshell, we were doing holidays is the easiest way to do it, but it was very bespoke. It wasn't commercial. It was very, you come, you experience it. A bit like going skiing, staying in a 5-star chalet, but it was small groups. We had up to 20 Greenland dogs. And the idea being that people would come, I'd teach them how to sled.
Nice.
to an extent. But yep. We were primarily, yeah, going out in the wilderness doing camping. It wasn't like some of these places where you see where it's like very commercial. You know, you're doing the same loop. This was like out in the wilderness.
What was the climate like?
Freezing. It was cold, yeah. It was like, I remember the first, because there's two times went out. The first time went out, middle of winter, and it was like minus 40 for like 2 weeks. And I was thinking, wow. And it, yeah, so it's cold. Cold. We were sort of quite northern, more central, on the border of Sweden. So yeah, freezing, fucking freezing. Absolutely freezing. Amazing experience.
Huskies?
But, so Greenland dogs.
Where was that? I don't even know.
So, in terms of breed, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, to be honest, it was one of those. I didn't know a great deal about it, obviously, when I first came in. I did a lot of training in England, mainly on carts. And then we went out and did the real thing, obviously. So, Greenland dogs, literally just like a, yeah, husky type, Arctic dog, obviously from Greenland. The way I used to think of it was you have your Malamutes, which are like your Lorries. Then you'd have your Sibes, which are more like, I don't know, your standard car, sports car, if you like, and then yeah. Your Greenlands is like your 4x4s. So typically, okay. If you were pulling Malamutes, you might be, I don't know, your average speed might be 6 mph, 8 mph, slower, but obviously you can pull a lot heavier, and you can see where I'm going with it. Greenlands were somewhere in the middle, so you could maybe do
a bit more versatile,
40-50k in a day, as opposed to Malamutes, you wouldn't really. So that was the dog that we were using. So yeah, it was my job in particular was I was on skis when we had guests, and again we'd only have maybe up to 6 people, so it's very as holidays go, it was fucking mint, like,
yeah,
in terms
of
if people came out, you had, it was the bollocks, I'll be honest with you, and like the cooking and everything, that side of it was part of my job as well.
Nice.
But primarily I was on cross-country skis. There'd obviously a couple of us, somebody at the front, somebody at the back, obviously managing dogs, but yeah, primarily it was teaching people how to handle dogs, teaching people how to get dogs on sleds. Obviously the dogs would be trained, a lot of the time they're following a trail anyway, but they would understand cues, they'd understand lead pressure.
Nice.
But primarily the dogs were like they were well up for it, yeah.
Is that particular breed of dog a breed of dog you would look at having in the future or no?
No, definitely not. Why? For me personally, like, again, there's always going to be a difference in opinion, like there is with everything. But for me personally, and again, you'll get some that break the mold, but Siberian Huskies, they're just not something I wouldn't advise.
Couldn't be further away from a pet dog, realistically.
No, but I mean, there'll be people sat there now who are listening to this with a husky sat at the feet going, talking fucking bollocks, mate. So it's one of them where, obviously, there's going to be exceptions, completely understand that. But personally, for me, if you're going to choose a dog, no. Again, having worked with them for, you know, a good length of time, out in the sticks, doing what they do, yeah, they're not a dog that I would look to go to, definitely.
I suppose you've experienced firsthand the work ethic and tolerance that these dogs can do.
It's fucking mental.
You're not replicating that with a 3-4 hour walk around the block, are you?
Obviously, that's the extreme, if you like. That's where, like, you know, that is the extreme. But having seen them in that environment and do what they're designed to do, let's be honest, yeah, it's not a dog that I would typically go, oh yeah, go and get one of them.
And I think if you take a working breed of dog and you dull it down, you dilute it to the point it can be the pet, it kind of defeats the purpose of that breed in the first place. So yeah. It's like when people try and calm down border collies so they can be pet dogs. I just don't see the point. Just pick a different dog.
Yeah.
That's more suitable instead of going against the grain of what this dog was intended and originated to do.
Totally. I think that's a huge topic, obviously, but I definitely agree. I think there's... And again, there's always going to be exceptions. There's always going to be that odd collie that is low drive and chilled and lazy bastard or spaniel or whatever. There's always going to be that. But I do agree. And yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from.
If I ever put a forewarning out there about a border collie or particularly a Malinois, and I might talk about mine and the work ethic and drive that they have, I always have 3, 4, 5 messages in my own personal inbox. Well, I've got one. It's fucking great with my grandkids. It sits around all day. I give it a 20-minute walk. Of course, there's going to be exceptions. There's exceptions to every breed and almost everything in life.
Literally. I think that's half the battle with just life in general, but certainly within dog training, there's always going to be exceptions. Methodology, I'm sure we'll get onto, breeds. You know, there's always going to be exceptions. That's just the way. But I think just having that adult approach to be like, yeah, get where they're coming from, know what they're saying. So yeah, I would agree when it comes to things like that, definitely.
So your first experience in sort of working dogs was with sled dogs, and then we fast forward to 2024. Simon Moody, aka the Mutnut on Instagram, what does a day in the life look like for the Mutnut?
So first of all, I'm a solo entity. There is nobody working for me as of yet. I previously dabbled with that in the past, which it could change. It could change again, to be honest. I mean, for what I do personal-wise, I'm a busy dude, like a lot of people. So there's a lot of other things outside of dog training, which do take a lot of time, I'll be honest. But the business itself, yeah, it's going good. It's been, last year was the biggest year. Hopefully, we've climbed, which is great. But in terms of day-to-day, obviously one-to-ones, I don't have a facility. Your facility is amazing, love it. Don't have the facility as such. Again, something that, without going off on one, that's something that's been being re-looked at, definitely. But primarily, yeah, one-to-ones, visiting people, have an online coaching service as well.
Yep.
That's something that, personally for me, I'm passionate about to an extent, because I don't think it's for everybody. I think definitely one-to-one. I think they both play off each other nicely. So a lot of time checking in with people online. I tend to target that just because I feel like I can offer a lot more value and support, particularly with people who've got maybe more difficult and serious behaviours as opposed to your more day-to-day stuff, where again one-to-one plays a huge part in what I do. Group stuff as well, I really, really like to do a lot of group stuff. As much as I'm a big fan of subscriptions, courses, I am keen to get people off the internet. Get them together, community. You know, what I do on a Sunday, particularly is the busiest day for the group stuff, where we get reactive dog owners together, or maybe not dogs that are reactive, but dogs that need that time working on engagement around conflicting and distractions, etc. So it's not all reactivity stuff, but yeah, I do like people to come off the internet a bit, get off watching the courses, which obviously, again, before people start slating, they have the value 100%. But yeah, getting people together, getting a sense of community, get the practical training in as well. So yeah, pretty much that's how it is.
I've seen a couple of dog trainers talk about how group classes, and again, we're a facility that does run group classes, and I'll allude to the reasons as to why in a moment, but I've seen a couple of dog trainers kind of almost slate group classes, saying they don't replicate real life. But for us, offering a group class is able to charge people a little bit less and still pick on their handling skills, still pick on their timing of reinforcement, still pick on their management skills, whilst not them having to pay £100 for us to come to their house or whatever. So if I agree that it doesn't replicate real life, because typically you get 5 minutes into a group class and you can simmer every dog down to the point that they're working quite well. But you throw them in a new environment, you might have to go through that process again, right? So how do you feel group classes benefit clients?
So I totally agree. Just this morning doing one-to-one with somebody with my dog, and they're two very, very reactive dogs. And yeah, you know what it's like. You get 10, 15 minutes into the session, the dogs are chilled. The reliability of that other dog is now very much within the dog's understanding. So yeah, they settle down and their arousal drops. So I understand it doesn't necessarily replicate that real life, so to speak. But obviously there is an element to criteria building, building up the dog's expectation of certain things, building up the dog's skill set, of course. But also you can, depending on what it is that you're trying to do and the dogs that you've got, you can simulate certain things. So whether, for example, with us, corner meets or anything where you can really put the dogs under a bit of pressure. So yes, obviously it's not like heading down the street and an off lead dog runs towards them, but
yep,
we'll do simulations of certain things. So we might have, if you've got a really reliable dog off the lead, we might have them charging towards a dog on the lead for a ball or whatever. Something where, again, we do this accordingly, that's appropriate. But what I'm saying is we have the ability to be able to go, yeah, we know it's not real life, but we can really make this dog feel like they are under a certain element of pressure if that's the right time. For me personally, I think there's, again, coming back to you saying with the group side of it, you can really, again, value for money, which, let's be honest, it's not everything's about money, but for me personally, I think you can get so far with one-to-one courses, this, that, and the other, where you understand the principle, you understand the theory.
Yep.
And you tend to find that then the jump from doing bits and bobs in your house or doing whatever, and then all of a sudden there's a dog coming towards you with a reactive dog, the jump's just too big, I tend to find, and people really struggle, or they're having to pay out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds for one-to-ones,
yep,
to use your dog or to use whoever. Whereas I think group setting, you can really, really make some solid progress forward. You can manipulate it, the environment, in a certain way to then build criteria. The dog builds a tolerance, builds a threshold, and so on and so forth. So I personally think it's invaluable. And plus, it also makes people realise they're not the only one.
Yeah.
They can see other people, they can learn off each, yeah, other. So I think it's really, really important. And like I said, I think courses and subscriptions, obviously the way every business is going, and yeah, I completely understand that.
It's almost looking to isolate people, right?
Yeah, and I just think I'm a bit old-fashioned, me, in many ways, and getting people, and I know you guys have a great community up here. I've been up here several times for seminars and courses and things like up here. You know, there's a real nice sense of community, and I think that's so important for dog owners.
I come from a sporting background, so I always kind of wanted to have this place as if it was like a sport team with like a sense of loyalty to the brand, and but something that we can offer back and forth from our clients to our dogs to our staff, and making sure that our own dogs, our staff dogs, are as good as they possibly can be, to kind of demonstrate that we can train dogs to a very high level, but then also build that sense of community around it as a brand that doesn't exist outside of our clientele base, but our clientele base almost exists within the brand. And I've been toying with ideas to kind of trying to extend that in terms of, that's why we do the merchandise and things like that. It's not that we just want to flood everything with marketing. I want people that bring their dogs here to a Saturday and a Sunday to feel like they're part of Team YCA, if it wasn't for a better phrase. I want to move on a little bit. Your follow come through to our Instagram page once upon a time, and I will be honest in that I have consumed your content in the past, and I've always thought that you spoke very well and you speak with a lot of sense. So I really wanted to extend the arm out to try and essentially hold a conversation with a dog trainer that might originate from a different methodology as our school here up in Yorkshire. We then obviously had a conversation and that didn't go exactly how I thought it was going to go. And your kind of the way you're looking at dog training and thinking about dog training has perhaps changed compared to how you trained last year or a couple of years ago. Is that something you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a huge topic. I think obviously everybody knows in dog training there is a huge fallout. There is so much arguing, so much silliness and daftness. And for me, it's something that I've really got tired of on both sides. And this podcast is not about slagging anybody off. This is about, more than anything, exactly as you said, trying to come together a bit, different backgrounds most definitely. But yeah, I think, and it'd be obviously cool to talk about that at an open and honest level, and I'm sure there'll be certain things you don't agree on, certain things we definitely do agree on, but equally I think that's just day-to-day life. Like, it doesn't mean that we have to, because you think this and I think that, therefore we have to go separate ways and slag each other off. Like, I just think this adult conversation needs to happen more. And to make it clear, obviously, people who don't know me, and a lot of people won't, of course. You know, I originated, going back in 2011 from a very, very compulsion-based, just very, very harsh.
Yep.
Very old school dominance theory. I'm not saying that's because that's rubbish. I'm just saying, you know where I'm coming from. The yep. whole keywords is what I'm picking up on there. Not the principle of it. But so yeah, very, very heavy-handed, literally heavy-handed. And to be honest, it didn't last long. I had a really bad experience with that.
Yep.
And I was like, this is not fucking right. I got into here to like animals, and
yep.
the experience with that trainer I had at the time really sort of scarred me in that sense. So from there, sort of did a full 360, 180, whatever. 180, yeah. And stumbled across IMDT,
yep.
like a lot of people do. Went through them, and like I say, I'll be honest with you, loved it. Absolutely loved it. Learned tons. You know, there's a lot of stuff I still really like about them now. APDT, similar. So I yep. did a very much a 180, because I was like, this is clearly wrong. So this makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's where my journey started. In and amongst that, I mean, I've worked for guide dogs, I've worked for Dogs Trust. Again, they don't really add up either, in terms of they have difference in opinions. I think they're probably...
From one another?
Yeah, I'd say okay. so, yeah. I think maybe more on the same page now. I don't know. I've not worked for either of them for many, many years. But in terms of when I first started guide dogs, it was a bit more, I wouldn't say aversive as such, but they definitely used a lot more negative reinforcement than the likes of Dogs Trust. I've spent a lot of time, like I say, in Dogs Trust as well, again. I know there's obviously lots of difference in opinion. Personally, for me, I love my time there. There's a lot of things I didn't agree with, a lot of things yep. I struggled with, but it, all in all, met some great people, absolutely loved it, and for me personally, yeah, it was a massive learning experience. But yeah, as time goes on and life changes, there's a lot of things along the way where, you know, my own learning has been challenged, my own, like everything. I think that's a healthy thing to do. For me, whatever your belief system, whatever you, I think you should, personally, it should be challenged. Because I think you can get so caught up in, this is the way I do it, this is the way yep. I've always done it. Not even dog training, just anything. In terms of, I've always done this, I've always done that. And I think to grow on that, me as an individual, I am obsessed with growing in terms of personally, physically, I'm very, very active in many, many different principles and disciplines. But yeah, coming back to dog training, I think, you know, along the way, things have definitely, I've been swayed different ways. And for a lot of time, yeah, I was in that, as we know, the camps that are the dog training industry, which I'm sure we'll get into now. But initially, yeah, did a 180, very much force-free, preaching it. Flag was well and truly in the ground.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And again, not here to slag off any force-free trainers. That's not what I want this to be about. But I think that the difficulty with the camps is the camps being force-free, balanced, and I don't know, some people say there's a third one. I really don't know. But I think we really, really need to come away from that more than anything and have these adult conversations that we're having now in terms of understanding that people have different ideas, people use different methods, and understanding that, you know, we are going to have potential disagreements. It doesn't mean that you can't learn something from them, or you definitely will be able to learn something
yep.
From somebody else that's doing the opposite. So I think, would I say that I've, again, you know, where am I at the minute? I mean, to be honest, my methods really haven't changed that much anyway. I think it's just being more open to the idea that people use different methods has been a big one for me. I was originally, going back 3 years ago, I would have fucking slated anybody. I'll be honest with you. I'm man enough to say that I would, you know, and it's quite cringy to look back at now, but I would slate anybody that wasn't on the same team.
Yep.
Because I'll be honest with you, in that camp, a lot of time you are not necessarily taught to do it, but it's like you're almost like, I don't know, put on a pedestal, I think. And I think that's something that I look back and cringe a bit now, and I'll be honest and say that. But I just think, you know, I've not really changed. It's just more that my mindset has changed to having conversations like this and understanding that people will work in different ways. And, you know, for a lot of the time, there are so many similarities. That's one thing I've come to learn, is having spoken to a few balanced trainers. Again, I hate that label. I don't really like any of the labels, which we can talk about. But you know, there's so many similarities, and people don't, from these different camps, don't actually tend to realize that you're so close to what you're doing anyway.
Yep.
But again, it comes down to the labels and the definitions of things that people then argue about.
I think because they're so caught up in hot-headed arguments, they're not realizing, one, the similarities that you've just mentioned. Two, again, you've just alluded to that quite often their definitions of things are so different. They're having a different argument to one another. And both sides really do misinterpret the other side massively.
Yeah.
The balanced, again, we're doing the air quotes again, purely think that the force-free side are only just throwing food at a dog and hoping for the best. But I also understand that they talk a lot about management and not allowing the behaviour to be rehearsed, which is why what we're absolutely massive on here is, if you can't fix it, just manage it. Don't allow it to be rehearsed. Don't put your dog in a position where they're going to have to receive an excessive amount of punishment or use a harsh form of negative reinforcement to compel the dog into a behaviour you want. The pace is always set by the owner anyway, because of, if you're not working at a pace that suits the owner, they're going to go to a different dog trainer regardless. So if you've got a force-free trainer that's going to take X amount of time, let's take 2-3 months to get to a certain point, well, they've not signed a contract with you. They're going to leave and go to someone that's going to smash the dog's fucking head in for doing the unwanted behaviour, right? So why don't we just work at the owner's pace, do right by the dog, and try and address the issue with the owner in consideration, because they're the one that's paying the dog trainer. They're the ones that's going to stick around, and ultimately it's their choice. So being able to kind of talk in a way that you can see both sides of the story is going to set any dog trainer up for success, because you can say, right, dog trainer A might do it like this, dog trainer B may do it like this. I'm going to give you an option C. How do they sound to you? Is that going to fit within a time frame that you need this issue sorted to stop your dog jumping up at your daughter and potentially giving her a bust nose to go into school with? How does that sound to you? And then working it through that way, because of if that dog owner goes through 3, 4, 5 dog trainers and none prove effective because of we're not fitting the standard set again by the dog owner, they get rid of the dog. They put the dog down. So we kind of need to be a little bit more versatile on all aspects of things to making sure we're doing right by the dog. And again, the force-free crowd purely think that any dog trainer that's using aversives are just squashing the dog into behaving and immediately going to that learned helplessness and shut down. Again, which with for a lot of trainers that are open to using aversives is not the case. Don't get me wrong. I think that the conversation or argument or discussion that's being had between the both camps are often had by the polar opposite camps, the ones that are kind of just flying the flag high on the force-free side of things, thinking aversives are always going to have some sort of ridiculous behavioural fallout. And again, that can happen. And maybe we can talk about the negative and sometimes unwanted repercussions of poorly applied pressure. And again, the guys that are just squashing dogs into behavior and just taking a green dog and just absolutely canning them until they kind of just too scared to do anything, so it looks like they're behaving or arguing with them. And there's, again, there's this wide spectrum in between, and until people in the middle of the spectrum start talking to each other and then working their way around out, I don't think any kind of progress is going to be made. And again, I think a big problem is that a lot of these dog trainers, except for the ones that are purely in it for the cash, truly do believe that they are doing absolutely right by the dog.
100%.
And when you truly do believe that, it's hard not to get defensive, right?
Of course it is, yeah.
Because of every dog that comes through here, I want to take in every single consideration. I want to take in the owner's lifestyle. I want to take in their circumstances. I want to take in the genetics of the dog and think, right, how can we get from this dog from A to B as swiftly, smoothly as possible and make sure that everyone's happy at the end and nothing unwanted happens to this dog in terms of he's not going to get passed around, he's not going to get put to sleep, et cetera, right? Whilst considering the other person on the end of the lead, which is the owner, who always sets the pace. They always set the pace. So, I think conversations do need to be had, but perhaps start in the middle and then work our way out. There is just some people that are so embedded inside an echo chamber from the compulsion side and the force-free side that probably they've got the earmuffs and the blinkers on and they're never going to change. But I don't think them people see many dogs.
because I think they get found out. They're going to be ill effective and they're going to be brutal with the dog.
Yeah.
And they're going to eventually be found out. So I think the guys that are floating around in the middle are the dog trainers that are popular at the moment and the dog trainers that are churning out lots of dogs. And these dog trainers also need to document it as well. And they also need to document the use of aversives. I know loads of, again, balanced dog trainers that are posting before and afters on social media, but they're not posting the aversive, and it makes it look like a cowboy show.
Definitely.
It makes it look daft. Yeah, if you're a balanced dog trainer, you have to post your methods, because if you can show, I will show corrections. I will show a dog having a heavier correction on the e-collar and say, look, this is momentary discomfort. However, we've now fulfilled this dog to the point that he can enjoy his life. He can experience lots of off-lead freedom, and it'll have a positive effect on his other behaviors because of his emotional needs and his biological needs are being met. To go through that momentary discomfort, it wasn't nice to see, it wasn't nice to document, but it is, it's there for you all. Okay, now you can make your choice.
Totally.
Because if keeping it behind closed doors is not doing anyone any favours.
And like I say, I completely understand that. I think it helps because it comes from you, in the sense of, like, obviously my background is not in tools, but I can completely, coming from somebody like yourself, in terms of, you know, granted we've not known each other for a very long time, but and other people as well who are very much in the same sort of camp or whatever we're going to use as yourself, I can completely understand that. I completely respect where you're coming from. You know, the idea of, granted it's not something I've done, but giving a dog that freedom to be able to be off lead every single walk, because you have that element of, I don't know, e-collar, for example, which I know is a controversial topic, and there'll be a lot of people who are going to send me death threats and DMs and all sorts, but it's just an adult, honest conversation. If that dog, and again, I've worked in rescue for a long period of time in regards to, obviously, from an employed basis and then as a consultant as well, the last 3-4 years with rescue centres close to me. Granted, I'm not actually with anyone at the minute, but I took a bit of time away. But yeah, you know, there's harsh realities of dogs get put to sleep, fucking shitloads of them week by week, like a lot, and it is fucking stressful and it's horrible to see. So, and there is those ultimatums and stuff where, you'll know it yourself, where people say, we're gonna have to rehome the dog, or we're gonna have to rehome one of the fucking dogs, or we're gonna have to, you know, for one reason or another, because, and again, you look at the dog's lifestyle, and I know you talk about this a lot, the biological fulfillment of dogs, and a lot of time aggressive and reactive dogs are on a fucking short lead doing the same fucking walk, never off the lead. So the ability to be able to, again, rightly or wrongly, and some people say, we'll just use a long line, whatever, fine, maybe for swan dogs, that's cool, that's fine, that's all the dog needs, whatever. But, you know, to then for somebody to come at someone like yourself and give you a load of shit or whatever because the dog's on an e-collar, but then that dog's off lead for however long a day, getting, again, they're now more well rested, there's a, you know, they're more decompressed, they're more whatever it is. And this is what I mean, this is the conversations that I think, granted, a lot of people might be listening and go, I might not choose to do that. Fine, but it's not this, why do we have to have a scrap about it then? Do you know what I mean? And I think that's where people are just so stuck in that we've planted our flag and now I'm, you know, 12 feet under because this is the way that I've always trained and always talked about and done on social media, and I can't come out of it. I have to sit in this parameter now and I have to blow the fucking trumpet because this is what I'm about. Plus, they also know they'll get a ton of shit, which, to be honest, in the last 2 years, I've got a ton of shit. I'm sure you have from different people, but, and I'll get a ton of shit from this, I know I will. But it's just, again, the people get stuck in this, well, we're part of this camp, so we definitely can't. Like, I have people, as I'm sure you do, have people messaging me because a client I put on Instagram, on social media, was using this kind of fucking harness. And once upon a time, that brand fucking said someone to someone else. And it's like, fuck me. Like, what planet are you on? Like, who gives a shit? We're helping the dog.
Politics
the
is dog, insane.
It's just fucking stupid. And a lot of people that work with me, they'll know I'm straight down the middle. You know, I'm very much a realist and I will say it how it is. But ultimately, we're here to help dogs. We are here to, and if anybody isn't, then all right, fair enough. Like, you know, I understand the there might be a place and a time to, you know, give someone a bit of shit. But majority, as you said, is that people sort of hanging around in the middle. I've noticed a couple of people who've come up to you as well, who I know maybe the Force 3 side, who've been hanging around with. I don't know. I've seen a few people and I thought, all right, okay. Mm-hmm. You've been commenting on stuff or been on a couple of seminars. And that's good to see, because it's like these are just mature people opening their minds a little bit and going, yeah, probably won't do a lot of what they say, but there's definitely things they're going to be learning, or there's definitely things I might implement that I haven't previously done before. And I think that's all to trying to get across, is just let's just be a bit more adult about it. But there will be people who say this is unacceptable, it can never be done, you can't learn anything from such and such because they promote this, that and the other. And again, a lot of the stuff we're talking about, it's not stuff I do anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's not stuff that I've experienced doing, but it's being able to open your mind a little bit and understand the amount of dogs, for example, you must help. And I think the other thing as well is people will not realise that a lot of stuff you do doesn't even, you don't even, tools don't even come into it. Or do you know what I mean? It's a lot of the time it will be, I'm sure, lower drive dogs or whatever, where it's like, yep, bit of this, bit of that, introduce lead pressure
management,
and again crate, people, but they just see,
meet the dog's needs, use the house line,
literally. And that's the thing, I think so many people such as yourself could have a sit down conversation and go, yeah, I do that, yeah, I do that, no, I wouldn't do that, yeah, I would do that as well. And it's again trying to maybe, like you say, work from the inside and out. But I think there'll be certain people that you just, yeah, you can't. But I think, again, it comes down to, as you were saying before, that ultimatum sometimes where it's like, well, this or the dog gets put to sleep. So, yeah, and I'll be honest, like when I've worked in rescue, I've flooded loads of dogs. Because I think, you know, where we're at now, the ultimatum is this or the dog gets put to sleep. And that has happened. So I'll be honest, yeah, don't get me wrong, if the setup was different, I wouldn't have. But again, it comes to the point, well, I'm not going to stick to these rules because that's what I've been taught. And I watch the dog be put to sleep. I'm meant to be helping dogs at the end of the day. So I agree in what you're saying in regards to, you know, a sharp prickliness in a certain moment to give the dog a much, much bigger world. I completely understand where you're coming from with that.
I want to talk briefly about stress. And now, something that I didn't realise is you have another Instagram page called Pain for Purpose, right?
Yeah.
And I actually noticed this page, had a little look, gave you a follow on that, and basically you're constantly putting yourself under physical stress, essentially, in a nutshell, right? In order to better yourself.
Yep.
So comparing that to what is the force-free mantra are almost completely counterintuitive to one another, because if I believe without, I will use the word pain as an umbrella term for discomfort, annoyance, the something that we would rather avoid. Because without pain, there is no pleasure, because of the marker of pain sets the baseline for pleasure, if you will, if you kind of understand what I'm saying here.
Totally.
So is the things that you do outside of dog training have an influence on perhaps how you've started viewing dog training a little bit differently?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I started viewing dog training differently the last 3 years. And again, it's not really changed that much. And this is where it comes back to the definitions, which I'll come back to in a second. But yeah, talking about things outside of dog training, please don't. I don't want anyone to think I'm egotistical in that sense, because I am definitely not, in the sense of I'm a person where it's like, I want to learn and be humble and learn from other people and, you know, a lot, get as much information as I can from other people. But yeah, I mean, away from dog training, combat sport is a big part of my life.
Yep.
Going to the gym, cold water therapy, that's before it became like
a
proper like trend now. That's something that I've been into for quite a long time now.
Yep.
Funny enough, that's where I met my girlfriend doing that. But yeah, it's...
And essentially the concept of cold water therapy is to put yourself in a high state of stress, right? So you can operate better in states of stress.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm no expert on it at all. It's just something that I was introduced to and thought, this is actually pretty cool. I know it's been around for a long, long time. And again, I don't know enough about it. And I'm not a scientist and I don't have the data to back it up. But it's just something I enjoy doing.
Yep.
Something I enjoy doing. I personally feel the benefits from it. But yeah, coming back to the mentality, is that for me, again, not to go on too deep, but as a kid, very insecure, very underconfident, very, like I was a mute till I was about 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I almost got to the point where I really wanted to toughen myself up, going back maybe like 6-7 years ago. Really wanted to toughen myself up, but yeah, putting myself in difficult situations. And cold water therapy is literally the bread and butter of that for me, because it's horrible. It is horrible, and it's something that I do most. Depends on when it is, to be fair. I'm not going to lie. At the minute, I've not been doing tons of it, but mainly because there's just training schedule is just stupid at the minute, so it's, I had no option to do it in the morning. But yeah, essentially, it's putting yourself in a horrible situation, working through it, breathing through it, coming out of it. I'm just building that threshold for certain things. But combat sports, again, getting punched in the face, it's something that you can even dissect. When I first started, very aversive, I'll be honest. Yep. Like, don't get me wrong, the people were sound as anything, but very aversive. Like, I didn't really have a skill set. And this is what got me thinking about dog training, because I got chucked in, effectively, sparring pretty quick, and got mashed up. Like, bad. Like, no, my nose is broken, been broken several times. But nose was broke pretty quick.
Yep.
Couldn't breathe out my nose for ages. Like, I just got made kicked in, basically.
Yep.
Didn't have a skill set. Didn't have anything.
Go through the adequate learning phase.
So I was just basically flooded and had nothing there. Literally nothing. And because I've always been a relatively biggish guy, it was just like, yeah, stick him in, 100 kilos, he'll be sound.
Yep.
Got my head kicked in. And then, you know, confidence severely dropped. And, you know, not having that skill set to be able to manage it, then stress kicks in. You can almost then go into a proper nerd fest of reactive dog, aggressive dog, this, yep. understanding the thresholds and triggers and stuff like that. Change it up a bit, fast forward a bit, completely stripped everything back in terms of understanding the mechanics of what I needed to do away from the ring, away from sparring, away from high pressure areas, away from adrenaline, ultimately.
Yep.
Repetition, strength and behavior, blah, 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 building confidence, building, and then bang, you know, come up that learning curve of the criteria to a point where it's like, okay, this is fucking stressful, but now to do this, now to do that. And then then you go into the quadrants, negative reinforcement, positive punishment, like, and obviously positive reinforcement as well. But the fighting for me is the perfect example of
all
the quadrant.
Four of the quadrants, yeah.
And I just think that, again, going back to force free training, again, there's so many good force free trainers that I know. Don't get me wrong, some fucking shit ones as well, just like there is on the other side of the spectrum. Yeah, yeah. But so many good ones. But then I look at it and think, you're not force-free, though, because you're doing a really good job of exposing that dog to something that's stressful.
Yeah,
person,
yeah.
dog, separation, anxiety, whatever it is. And I'm like, but they still fly the flag of force-free. And I'm like, but you're not.
Negative reinforcement is almost always there.
That's
In fact,
I mean.
It's probably
always
there.
Always there.
I'd challenge anyone to find me an example of where negative reinforcement is not present.
Mm.
To relieve ourselves of, to eat some food and acquire food, there must be some negative reinforcement of hunger or at least the desire or craving to acquire that food. That's negative reinforcement. Even, like you said, going to the gym, like putting ourselves under physical pressure, or yourself, if you're going to the gym frequently, you might feel the negative reinforcement of not going to the gym.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you go and feel good after, but the negative reinforcement of, oh, I've missed a gym session, I feel a bit angsty and I don't like it. The negative reinforcement of that, even like someone then threw the example of sex. Okay, that's positive reinforcement. No, to relieve your sexual urges is negative reinforcement.
Exactly,
every positive has a negative associated, and you're a good trainer when you start understanding that, understanding the dog's drives and utilising that in your favour a little bit. It's not always just hunger or lead pressure.
Yeah.
It can be...
I think to jump in there as well, some people are going to be listening going, yeah, well, I don't fucking get in cold water, I don't do combat sports. And that's cool, that's absolutely fine. Not everybody wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then you could compare that to a high drive dog. I'd be a very high drive dog where I need fucking outlets to do shit.
Yeah.
Other people, they don't want him. That's absolutely fine. And yeah, for a majority of those times, those dogs, they're going to be the easier dogs to train. They're going to be the easier dogs to fulfill. Whereas for me, literally yesterday, Mrs. was saying, you're a fucking nightmare because you just do not stop. You're fucking weird. She literally said those words last night. We were at a track session because we're training for a Hyrox, and she's like, you are fucking weird. So what I'm saying is, people listening at home, no, obviously, there's always going to be exceptions. There's always going to be differences. Not everybody's like me. Not everybody's like you. Not everybody, whatever. And the dogs are all different. That's cool. That's absolutely fine. But coming back to the whole definition, so many great force-free trainers. And in my opinion, again, I'm not professing to be the best dog trainer or the most, you know, educated dog trainer or anything like that. For me, I'm a pet dog trainer. I work with everyday people mm-hmm. that want a better life for the dogs. And for me personally, it's like any decent dog trainer, you want to get better. You want to get into, and for me, I do want to go down the dog sport route, because I just think that's another conversation. But what I'm getting at is, for me, I think I look at so many force-free trainers, I'm like, you're really good at what you do, but I don't see how you're force-free, because the definition of what you're telling me don't add up to the force-free, but again, you'll speak to different ones and it's like, the definition is different.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, okay, how can we argue this then, if you're saying is different to what you're saying, and you're both having a scrap, or you're having a scrap with that person.
Yeah.
And
the meaning of the words and language you use is completely different.
It's different, and I think it's more people's attitude to the dog. I think that's what I understand where people are coming from when they say force-free, because it's like, I don't want to put the dog under any unnecessarily or over the top or inappropriate pressure. But they're really good at what they do, because they put that dog under pressure at the right moments at the right time. They understand when to push and when to back off.
Yeah.
So to me, that ain't force free, and that's where I class myself. It's like I know when to put pressure on and back off, or you know, I know that dog won't be able to take a lot, so I'll take my time, or that dog can take a lot, or maybe we need to speed the process up because we've got an ultimatum of the dog might be put to sleep. Or for me, that I don't do that with tools, but I put dogs under pressure, 100%. But you'll get some people in that camp going, "You're a fucking idiot because you're putting the dog under pressure." But coming back to your first question, then was. We move forward with stress.
Yeah, yeah. Then no adaptation occurs without some sort of stress, because there would be no need.
Yeah.
Surely, if there's no stress and no difficulty and no, let's call it hardship, then nothing's going to adapt to overcome that hardship next time. So if we just constantly stay at like a pleasurable threshold, one, like our barometer for pleasure will eventually just become fucked. Like people who win the lottery that get depressed because there's just no struggle in their life. Yeah, so there's no barometer for actual pleasure. And two, we're never dipping into stress, so therefore there's no need to adapt. When you put yourself in cold water, and when you take yourself to the gym, and when you might go into a difficult sparring session, the hardship gained from that session will cause some sort of adaptation, whether that's a conscious adaptation or subconscious adaptation. So the subconscious is my muscles will grow a little bit bigger and a little bit stronger to tolerate more intensity next time. And that's the subconscious, sorry. And then the conscious is going to be, oh, I got my head punched in with that guy's left jab, so maybe I need to look at building my defense against the southpaw's jab, for example.
I think as well, sorry to interrupt you, that in that moment there, forget dog training for a minute, but negative reinforcement is so fucking reinforcing.
Oh yeah.
I think it can be so reinforcing.
If it wasn't reinforcing, we wouldn't do any...
I know it sounds like an obvious thing to say, but like...
But people don't realize
people
that.
Don't realize that, yeah.
If it wasn't reinforcing, all of our contact sports would be touch sports instead.
Yeah.
We would play touch rugby. And we would do like shadow boxing and what they call pattern work in martial arts. But no, it's the we enjoy. I got a rugby league background. I played for like 15 years. I played professionally. I also played touch rugby, but I wouldn't play touch rugby over like the possibility of potentially like receiving some discomfort in a tackle, because the reinforcement of dodging the tackle, dodging, swerving the punch, jiu-jitsu, like breaking the chokehold, is very reinforcing, potentially more so than positive reinforcement, like the escaping of discomfort. And as long as the dog's gone through the appropriate learning phase, like you should have before the sparring, then we can actually, especially when we train sport dogs, teach them that that element of negative reinforcement, whether it be the e-collar or pinch collar or whatever, can also increase motivation, not always decrease motivation.
Yeah. I get that now, and that's something that previously I'd have just gone, mate, you're talking shit. Don't know what you're talking about. And this is, again, coming back to that argument of, I think, personally for me, like, reason why, you know, I was actually really touched. That sounds a bit dramatic, but I was actually really pleased when you messaged going back several months now, because I was, for somebody that hasn't trained or been around people with tools, it's something that I've wanted to come and experience, and I have obviously been up here a few times now. And watch you guys, you know, with your PSA club, and that is just like fascinating. And obviously been up for a seminar with Hans as well, which again, very fascinating. A lot of stuff I thought might not be quite for me, but literally majority of it was just like, mate, this is fucking mint. This makes so much sense. And granted, it makes a difference that I haven't got a fire breathing Malinois.
Yeah.
I've got Olive, but in terms of it's been really good. But what I'm saying is, I feel like some people slag off other methods, but they've never fucking done it.
Yeah.
How can you? And that goes the other way as well.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of balance trainers slagging off force free stuff, and I think, hang on a minute, have you done it? It works both ways, and this is a neutral conversation. I'm not here to slag anybody off. I think we can learn from both sides. Not that I need to tell you that, but you know, for me coming up and immersing myself, maybe not even doing it, but immersing myself.
Yep.
And last visit here, we did a bit with each other with the e-collar on.
Yep.
Me, e-collar on you. And that was interesting. That was really, really interesting to understand again where you're coming from. And yeah, it was just, and I think what I'm trying to say is, I don't see how you can slag something off and not have a clue how it works. Like, I don't know how you can do it. You can, obviously, but I don't see, you haven't got a valid argument. It's like everybody in comment section in it, really, let's be honest. They just, depending on who it is and what it's about, a lot of the time there's not a lot going on to back up the argument from a practical sense. So, but yeah, no, I think it's, yeah, I think it's just an adult, mature conversation. There'll be disagreements, there'll be agreements.
And I suppose you're in a bit of a, sticky situation that I am not jealous of, because of obviously you've previously on a certain side of things. When I then went to look at your Instagram recently, I cottoned on straight away as to how you've like removed the label from how you're pushing yourself forward. So then when we spoke, I was kind of expecting, oh, okay, yeah, I can kind of see where this conversation is going. You've said to you, by your own admission, you've had a couple of messages from people that...
Oh, mate, lol.
And then conversely, you've reached out to a couple of balanced dog trainers that maybe have shunned you a little bit because of you've been...
Mate, so I get that.
Now you're slap bang in the middle, and I won't call you a convert, but slap bang in the middle that may be open to using other methodology. You're in a difficult situation, I guess, because of the force reading out, ain't going to fucking want to know you most part.
Yeah. It depends, because there's still some very... From that community, some very sensible people. There's some very, very good trainers. Yeah, of course there'll be... Mate, I get shit from following you.
Yeah.
But there's other people as well. Not to necessarily call all these people out, but other people that I follow. Sometimes, I don't agree with a lot of the stuff they do, but sometimes I think for me that's like, well, challenge your belief then. I don't know, it's getting a bit deep again, but for me personally as an individual, I want to be the best version I can. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm, you know, physically... You know, that is a big passion of mine, but challenging your own beliefs might just be to go, yeah, I am right. I know I am right. But challenge it. Do you know what I mean? If you just literally, it's like, again, going back to a dog, if the dog ain't exposed to anything different, they're not gonna change. So, yeah, I think they'll obviously, and I get that, but there'll be a lot of people that watch this and go, oh my God, he's this, he's that. Let's fucking, you know, there will be a lot of backlash.
Pitch folks out.
Oh, mate, big style. But I think there'll be a lot of mature people going, you know what, it's just a sound, honest conversation. Yeah. It doesn't even mean like anything massively changes or such. It's just I don't see why people can't have more of a sit down conversation like this than just slagging each other off day in, day out.
Hammer and tongue.
I really don't think that's going to get us anywhere.
And they spend so much time doing it. There's a lot more.
No, man.
I don't know how they've got the time.
I do not know how people have got the time to have wars in comments and literally this morning. Lay in bed and some cheeky bastard on TikTok, this isn't even dog related, fucking commented saying how shit my fucking hair is.
What did he say?
About my fucking fringe. I thought, you cheeky bastard.
Oh, but, mate, I've had it before. Like, no, coloured tattoos don't belong on any man. On a dog training video. Like, what?
Oh, mate, it's mad. People have too much time. But, yeah, some cheeky bastard going on about my fringe. And just like... So yeah, it's one of them. It comes with it, but I'm sure you do. Like everybody on social media, you just get shit. Anyway.
They're usually people without a profile picture, no post, three followers, literally. And you're just like, you're not even a real person.
No.
You're sat there in your mum's basement.
Totally. So there is that. I mean, not to flip this round, but the question I was going to ask you was, because this is something that I'm interested in, not to become the podcast host here, but in terms of sports dogs, then.
Yeah.
Talk to me about like use of tools in comparison to pet dogs.
So with pet dogs, a lot of time we're better off reducing the dog's overall state of arousal and drive, and we almost want to, and I'll use this term carefully, kind of flatten the dog out. Like our rate of we don't have to be too crazy in playing with reinforcement to get the dog like really hyper and performing behaviors, and we don't have to use much negative reinforcement to activate a dog into behaviors. We just want the dog to be nice and chilled and flat, and then outside of that meet its needs and play with it to make sure it does have an outlet to like get his beans out, if you will.
Yeah.
With sport dogs it's almost complete opposite. So we've recently just got three new puppies here, Lincoln, Gigi and Texas.
That
8 weeks, 10 weeks, 15 weeks, or wherever they might be. Now, everything we're kind of doing with them to push forward as sport dogs is going to be about building drive, building desire in behaviors. Now, as a byproduct of that, the dogs are going to be more drivey and want to give us, maybe we call it naughty. They're going to be a little bit more naughty and a little bit more pushy. It might challenge the handlers a little bit. To a degree, you kind of want that in a sport dog. So again, using negative reinforcement, we don't overlay that till like 6 months and beyond. Negative reinforcement in motivationally, which you've now kind of been immersed to in the Nipo Po seminar, which is probably a conversation for a different day, and all about building little monsters to begin with, which means like a little bit more rest time, a little bit more crate time, a little bit of quote unquote deprivation, to make sure that when they do come out, they're working really hard for food, they're working really hard for toys. And with pet dogs, what we want to be doing is a little bit more satiation, so we're not building a dog that's maybe too drivey and a lot of passive management, whereas the pet the sport dog stuff is a little bit opposite to begin with. Of course, there's going to be similarities because dogs are going to still live pet lives, so we're going to make sure that they're not like absolute monsters that can't be lived with. But when they're definitely doing this sport stuff, we want to be building, it's like we're building the engine, and we want V8 engine by the time they're a year old. So,
and the other thing, not to take over the podcast, but
I never get asked questions, so ask as much as you want.
I think what I wanted to ask was because there'll be a lot of people sat at home, maybe, well, I don't know, people who maybe more of the, I don't know, I fucking hate using the labels because it doesn't make sense anyway. I think when you say balance training, for me, balance is what you do the most of, but do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's a poor label to suggest anyway. But you get what I'm saying. More of the force-free approach will think, you know, with a lot of balance trainers, they are, I think what surprised me a bit about you, myself actually, was, you know, how you handle your dogging around the house, you know, in terms of, how do I put it, you know, like old school ways, like no dog on the couch, no dog doing this, you know, dog is a robot.
Yep.
But I get that is the opposite with you, or it seems very much like it. In terms of like, you go home, I can imagine, I don't know, Stark Range or whatever, just dicking about on the couch with you, chilling with you. Do you know what I mean? I think a lot of people that from speaking to a lot of people and being in that community a lot previously,
yep,
that's what people refer to a lot is, oh, you know,
robot dogs.
Yeah, and you know, whereas I can't not really explain it very well, but you know, like the idea of the dog being on the couch, or the idea of the dog being able to misbehave, so to speak, or I don't know. And I just think I don't get that vibe of you at all. I think it's very much,
no, I think
you enjoy your dogs for what they are.
Yeah, of course. And I think when people come to my house, they're very surprised at how they see my dogs behaving, and they're just happy-go-lucky dogs. They're going to bark when the door goes. They're running around the garden playing with each other. They're on the sofa. Most nights they're sleeping in my bed with me. When Stark was a bit younger, a lot more management was taking place because he was going through training.
Yeah, of course.
But, and I might upset a couple of people saying this, but because of I have taught the dog what no means through aversion, if they step the line, I can say no and they will stop, which means that they can have more freedom and need to use less management because I've got that power of, hey, knock it off.
Yeah.
Like, stop fucking around. Stop jumping up at that person. Get off and go to your bed. But for the most part, I don't see the point of having a dog. And of course, behavioural cases there's a little more passive management needed. And when your dog's riddled with anxiety or experiencing aggression, especially in the house, resource garden, et cetera, or you're trying to build a really good sport dog and you need to go through that kind of phase of a little bit regimented in adolescence. My dogs are now trained. They give me exactly what I need from them. They come back when they're called. They'll go on their bed when they're asked. But for the most part, I don't need to run a dictatorship around the house.
Yeah, I think that's a key word.
And again, you'll have seen my two older dogs. I probably brought out a PSA, like jumping on, like going in people's pockets and like begging for food and things like that. I'll share food off my plate and all the rest of it because of, for me, there's nothing I need to address or fix with them. So I let them be dogs.
And
if I say no, don't do that. So, for example, the other day I took him for a walk around our big field, and our big field is maybe like 5-6 acres, and I saw a deer in the trees. And again, for my older dogs, I don't use any tools anymore. There's no long line on them. There's no e-collar on them or anything. And it's a private field. It's our field. It's contained. There's a couple of short walls that you could get over. And the deer shot out, flew past my dogs. I give him the big nope. They were like kind of frozen, like, shit, no, we don't need to do that. Because of they've been through the aversion.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, any other dog that even was on a long line that is 6 meters away from the owner and then on a 5 meter long line, that dog is gone. And that deer went over the fence, onto the road, and most dogs are going to be chasing that. And I'm totally comfortable with my dog understanding through a bit of discomfort what no means, but being able to live a life of being a normal dog.
Yeah, yeah.
And me and Kirky always say the same. Like, his dogs are exactly the same. They're very rarely crated. My older two are never crated. Stark sometimes crated. They'll run around the house. Like, his house is, I call it, like, the fucking loony house. They're picking up crocs and, like, running around and chasing each other, bouncing off the sofas and stuff like that. But if he says, hey, knock it off, they're going to stop. And unfortunately, there needs to be a bit of consequence to be able to empower a handler to do that. And if you're not prepared to offer that consequence, then you better be prepared to use more passive management and the stuff like, okay, have rules around the sofa and maybe house lead on the dog and things like that.
Yeah.
But for me, how I want my dogs to live is like dogs, like part of the family. My dogs are like my kids to me. I absolutely adore them, but that doesn't mean they're immune to rules and stuff.
I love that. And I think that is, I've seen it with other trainers, more balanced maybe just through social media, which is not a 100% accurate representation, obviously, but where it's like you can tell the vibes a bit, like, rightly or wrongly, that might be sound for them.
Yep.
Rightly or wrongly, where it's, you know, dog definitely not the bear, dog not, you know.
Yep.
Even jumping up and sit like, I get it, but I think a lot of people, maybe of the Force 3 side, will just instantly look at you and judge you and be like, he'll definitely, like, walk through the door, every single door first. He won't let the dog in the bed.
Yep.
The dog will be crated fucking 22 hours a day and the dog will be scolding, locked out of the house. It's like, that's the thing, again, I think people understanding more and having these conversations where it's like, you know, I'll be honest, like back in the day, like for example with Olive, like she doesn't sleep in our bed.
Yep.
She sleeps on her bed. We can shut her downstairs.
Yep.
Previously couldn't do that. Like when we first got together, me and my girl, because she's technically my girlfriend's dog, previously just the way that things had worked with them two, Olive's in the bed constantly, which for me, it's just not how I want to do it.
Yep.
So we have it now where she can be downstairs, she can be shut downstairs, she can sleep on her bed in our bed, and then typically in the morning, plonk on the bed, having cuddles. I love her. It's like the best time of the day. I fucking love it. And she is a soft ass, and in the sense of she's not a high drive dog. So it's interesting because that, for a lot of people, is what they do. But I think me as a trainer going back a few years, I wouldn't have dared put that on Instagram because I just think like people are going to fucking judge you or people are going to say this. And obviously previously I had a lot of heat from balance trainers or whatever as well. Took a lot of shit from them, more so when I was in that, you know, going back a few years. So I think it's really interesting to hear you say that. That's one thing I wanted to talk about, because I think a lot of people will go, fucking hell, he does this and he does that, but he has his dogs in the bed. Yeah. Like, I was surprised when you said it then, because I was thinking,
yeah.
So it's, I think, a lot of people are. I think it's really good to people understand that, you know, differences. You use e-collar or prong collar or whatever, but then also the dog's fucking tucked up in bed at night. The dog's got so much freedom. The dog's being a tit. The dog's grabbing stuff. The dog's jumping up, causing chaos. Like, it's just normal shit.
Yeah. And, like, Ranger at Christmas, like, jumped on the table and took some food. Like, and I was like, he's being a dog. My fault.
Yeah, I wasn't.
I'm going to absolutely fucking come on him.
And maybe some trainers would. I don't know. Maybe because I don't know. But I think that's really, it's a really good point to talk about, people who are just understanding that, all right, okay, maybe he's not like this and that.
Yeah. And again, I'll just touch on, sometimes management is necessary. If you're not prepared to offer certain consequences or you want to use more motivation, you can't satiate a dog with luxuries and then expect him to be really motivated to start working. But again, if your dog's where you want them to be at, you don't need to run that dictatorship all the time. As long as they've got the fundamentals there. Again, like, people are absolutely amazed when they see Stark just running around and being a dog. And like, if you watched me of a week between me and my dogs just getting up and living together, even if you were heavily against tools, you'd be like, there's no way those dogs haven't got really good lives, amazing lives.
They're
off lead all the time. They're very well disciplined and they'll come back when they're called, but there's not that tyranny that we're running all the time, and it's quite the opposite. And again, most of the staff same vibe.
And I think that's is really interesting. And even, like I say, not that I won't compare myself to certainly not Olive and Stark, but in terms of even people say, when I sometimes meet up with the dog and she's just on a flexi and she's chilling, don't get me wrong, she, if I need her to, she's in heel and she's doing what she needs to do, but I'm like, I've got it. Don't necessarily need it.
No, you don't need to constantly be flexing it all the time, that your dog can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In this.
But don't get me wrong, I think there's an element of course, and I know there's not the big argument from one side to the other where it's like you never see any practical training, you just see someone talking to camera. Get that, understand that. But then also, it's, you know, so there is a point of a practical training, your dog, as a dog trainer, being able to fucking do the shit that you're teaching people and charging people for. Obviously, I totally understand that. But I think, yeah, it's that you don't need to constantly be obsessed, and it's not this fucking dictatorship. So yeah, I totally resonate with that.
I just want to ask kind of one final-ish question. Where do you see yourself going in terms of your own personal dogs? What's the next dog for you? What do you want to do with that dog?
I mean, I've obviously previously had several dogs. A lot of the time, to be honest, I've always rescued. I've always, not that again, starting off, and I don't have an issue with people buying puppies. I'll definitely be getting a puppy at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, always previously rescued. Always had Staffies, to be honest.
Yep.
So having Olive Spaniel is a nice new mix. In terms of, for her, I mean, realistically, she's not going to probably want to work, I'll be honest. Like, I know where that, as far as we can go.
We spoke about this. She's probably a dog that was satiated with luxury and spoiled a little bit too early before she went through the training process.
Definitely, yeah.
So, which kills motivation, ultimately. So definitely. Then when you want to get your dog to do they're less likely to want to do things because of they're like, hey, I've already won the lottery. Why are you expecting me go to work, 100%, right?
And for anybody interested, yeah, so... Again, not to completely slag off Brooke, my missus. But no, in terms of, yeah, previously just been given everything because that was the mindset of I want to give the dog the best life, which a lot of people do. You know what I mean? It does make sense in that regard because we humanise everything and we go, oh, the dog needs this, the dog needs that, the dog needs that. But yeah, given way too much external reinforcement to everything. From food, from environment to dog to people to everything. Yep. So yeah, it's very difficult then when I come in and it's like, right, this needs to change. So then all of a sudden she's just going to think, well, you're a knob.
Yep.
You're a twat. Yep. Like I don't really want... So I had to be careful obviously to begin with because I wanted to make sure that I had a good relationship. So yeah, obviously building motivation can be difficult. A lot of people out there have similar issues. And
A lot of pet clients do.
You have to tread carefully because again, it's finding that balance of, you know, using rewarding behavior you want, but also you're gonna have to restrict and manage to build value. I always say, wherever there's scarcity, there's usually value.
Yes,
birthdays, Christmas, holidays, like there's always an emotional attachment to something that is lacking in volume. So, been obviously trying to work that to then be able to, as you said, find that motivation to then be able to create behavior that I do want and get her engaged with me. Whereas before, if it was just like, no. And she's gonna think I'm a twat.
Yeah.
So it has been tricky in terms of, in that sense, building the motivation appropriately and correctly, which is quite a long winded.
Yep.
But yeah, we're getting there. Definitely. So in terms of future dogs, definitely will be, just not at the minute, just from a logistics point of view. We should be houses and moving and stuff like that. But ideally, I don't know whether it would be a Malinois, but I definitely would like a higher drive dog.
Yep.
Whether it be, I don't know, whether it might just be good old Labrador, whether it might be, I don't know, Rottweiler, I don't know. But it's going to be something definitely higher drive than Olive. But as lovely as she is, she's sound as anything and she's helped me a lot, bless her, with a lot of other dogs. But yeah, and to throw another one in the mix, I've said this to you before, but I'm really keen to bring her up here. We're getting your classes.
Yep.
Just to see what other people are doing, learn off other people. Yeah. Maybe that's not for me, that definitely is for me, or whatever. Just because I think it's a healthy thing to do. I think it's to be able to then nitpick and go, that looks mint. I'm definitely going to take a bit of that. Yep. Not sure that's for me or Olive, but maybe. So, yeah, I think that's what people... I do think we need more of it. I really, really do. And I know there's been, you know, other platforms that have had discussions with different opposed trainers and stuff like that, but I do think it needs to happen more, definitely.
Yeah, but more conversations perhaps like this than just fucking slagging contests on Instagram, right? Because that convinces no one.
No.
There's no chance one of those commenters is going to turn around and go, do you know what? You're right. Yeah. That's a very good point. Yeah. I'm going to change how I think about dogs now.
Delete the comment. Yeah. No, it never works. So I don't bother replying.
No.
If you do get shit, I just don't bother replying.
There's I will entertain it in a jokingly way. just to get a bit of traction there because I know how Instagram works. But I very, very rarely, if ever, get into like a serious debate. I just say, look, I've got thousands of hours of me talking about dogs online. Like, go and watch it there. If you still disagree, then we're probably not going to agree. Yeah. And I've offered people to come on for podcasts and things like this. People very rarely want to then come and have this conversation. Yeah, yeah. It usually ends up in just...
And it is difficult. Like, I get it, like, previously, 2-3 years ago, not a fucking cat and hell's chance would I step foot in here. No way. Because there was just that way inclined of, well, this is science based, this is this and that. Yep. And let's not talk about that again. But, you know, a lot of it is, I totally agree with. And some of it, I just think maybe not. But anyway, I'm just very, very, I don't like being attached to labels. I haven't done for several years. For me, I do what I do because I feel like it works. But I am so open minded to how other people do it, taking things on board for me. But yeah, I agree. It's just, yeah, going back, say, a few years, I wouldn't have come here, but it's, again, just being open-minded and just looking at things perspectively. Maybe, again, going back to what we talked about before, things away from dog training, they definitely had more of an impact. And again, just to be clear, anyone listening, I'm not saying everybody has to start fucking cold water therapy and start scrapping. It could be anything that you're doing.
It's actually swung me the other way, whereas probably since we've started speaking and we first kind of started chatting and things, I've started getting to the gym a bit more, testing my body a little bit more, and I've actually started to see kind of how my brain works under stress a little bit. I come from a sporting background, but I let it all slide for probably a couple of years where I started working a bit, and I've probably just eased up on the compulsion, especially with my sport dog Stark.
Oh, okay.
And trying to use a little bit more motivation, and that's not me like, okay, I'm going to put the PVC pipe down. That's never something we've done, but I'm just kind of, okay, when he's in that state of fatigue, I've experienced this. Maybe we'll can the session here he's not thinking right, because I wouldn't be thinking right after I've done some shuttle runs with my PT or whatever. Exactly, I think kind of testing our bodies can help us kind of with dogs and swing us one of two ways or either.
And again, that's the back and forth of this conversation. I take things from you, maybe you take things from me. Like, I think I really don't see what the big deal is.
Yep.
But yeah, no, going back a couple of years, I'd have really struggled to come in here, probably from an ego perspective. I'd have struggled, I'd have been insecure, I'd have been uncomfortable to come in. And, you know, I've said from the first time I came up here, literally, everyone's been sound, very, very welcoming, very, very nice.
Yeah, and I think you see people work their dogs and how they feel about their dogs. You're like, you're not someone that hates your dog. You exactly, fucking love that dog.
Exactly. And I think that's what I'm trying to get across here, and that's why I wanted to come up when you invited me. I thought, yeah, this would be good, because I think it's bringing people together more, and at the end of the day, we're here for the dogs and the benefit of the dogs. And if people can learn off each other and then help other people more, whether that's they take this or they don't take that advice or they don't take these sort of whatever it is, then that's what we're here for at the end of the day.
Cool. I think we'll wrap it up on that though. Thank you very much for joining us. You obviously come up a couple of times, and you're more than welcome to come up as much as you want. Train your dog, join in our group classes, watch our sport club. If you see yourself with a Malinois in the future, then obviously that's something we can help with as well.
See what happens.
See what happens.
I speak to Olive.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much, Simon. Cheers, mate. Thanks, mate.